Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. If someone offered you a gift that could eliminate your suffering, would you accept it? If it took moments each day to afford yourself the joys and happiness that life can offer, would you spend that time on yourself? If each moment of your life could contain the possibility of more self-acceptance, more love, and deeper fulfillment, would you turn away from or ignore that possibility? Some of us are brought to a place through our suffering where we seek to find remedy for often unfathomable losses. My guest today, from the tender age of 16, has known grief upon grief and loss upon loss. Her 44-year-old father, a NASA rocket scientist, died in her arms from a sudden heart attack. She subsequently lost two brothers, both under the age of 40. These losses necessitated that she learn how to be with whatever comes in life without having to deny, avoid, suppress, or ignore the hard parts of living. Her life and work has blossomed under her practice of mindfulness and of contemplative studies with world-renowned teachers including Thich Nhat Hanh, Jack Kornfield, Pema Chodra, and Tara Brach. Today, she is a senior mindfulness teacher with Google's Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, a major fellow, a senior fellow at George Mason's University Center for the Advancement of Well-Being, and a professor of mindfulness leadership at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. She is a loving mother of a 13-year-old daughter and the kind and wise spouse of her husband of 20 years. She is making the world a less painful, more peaceful place each day, creating loving kindness and compassion through her teaching and her practice of mindfulness. I am deeply grateful to have her on our program today. So, Laurie Cameron, welcome and thank you so much for being with me on Living Above the Drama.
Thank you so much for having me, and that was such a beautiful introduction. Thank you for that.
Oh, well, Laurie, you have such a beautiful story. You know, as we were talking about in the pre-interview, everyone has such a beautiful story, has a jewel that they bring with them into the world, and they have something wonderful that is about why they're here. And you have a great story and a great purpose that I'm very excited about you sharing with us today. You were telling me at the pre-interview that you were raised in a home that really valued contemplative traditions, and you were taught to pray and to see life through the eyes of love. And wow, I just love that. Taught to pray and to see life through the eyes of love. And then you said, be still and know that I am God, was something that you heard in your upbringing. Do you want to talk to us about your early upbringing? Because it sounds quite beautiful.
Well, I think, you know, like any childhood, there were a lot of beautiful parts and a lot of hard parts. But one thing that I really treasure is looking back and seeing the example that my mother provided for me and the conditions she created for us to learn how to be still and how to just access peace in every day. And she did that, you know, we did that with structure and we did that with rituals. And I did that by doing it alongside of her, you know, whether it was stopping and pausing before dinner to express our gratitude for what we were about to eat, or saying bedtime prayers, or going to a candlelight prayer service at church on Wednesday nights. I think that structure and rituals and rhythms are beautiful ways to help us really cultivate contemplation in every day.
Wow, isn't that? I tell you, you don't hear that too much today, unless if I talk to people from certain parts of the country where that tradition is still more enculturated into the day-to-day experience, but you don't hear it that much, where people are actually invited in their upbringing and in their training, if you will, to reflect in that way. And so it sounds to me as if you've had quite an extraordinary mom. Is your mom still with you?
No, she passed away 7 years ago. So I'm missing her physical presence, but I guess the answer is yes, she is still with me.
Yes,
I feel her with me all the time.
Yes, of course. You've had so much loss, Laurie. In the introduction, I talk about that. And it is remarkable to me. I think it's a testimony to your mindfulness practice and to the way you were raised and to your incredible commitment to making the world and your life and your family's life a more peaceful and loving place. Can you talk about, I mean, you've had a lot of loss. Can you talk about it and share with us how it informed your further practice of these things?
Yeah, you know, it was certainly difficult to lose my dad when I was in high school and then to lose my two brothers later on as a, you know, as a young woman. But I do see the gift in the loss, and the huge gift that I'm really grateful for is knowing at a young age how precious and fragile life is. And I think it's really, really easy for us to get caught up in the busyness of our day. And a lot of us actually move towards busyness. We choose busyness because there's some kind of a rush or a dopamine hit or a feeling of worth, you know, when we check a lot of things off the to-do list or get a lot done or have a busy calendar. It makes us feel valuable. But we actually miss a lot of our life that way. So I think at an early age, I learned that life can end, you know, very quickly and unexpectedly, and that I became pretty determined to figure out ways to be present, to be awake and alive for as many minutes of the day that I could. So that became really the first part of my journey. And then over, you know, after a couple decades of my own practice and training around the world, I started to translate that into teachings and programs and coaching and all the things I could do to bring that out to others.
So let's just see if we can walk your path with you a little bit. You got out of high school, your father had been deceased, and you now had this thing. What was your motto? Carpe diem? Was it?
Yeah, seize the day.
Seize the day. That was your motto.
Yeah.
And so you started seizing the day from that point on. How did
right.
that? How did that? I mean, you know, you're kind of living above the drama right now, if I may. You're living in this very, you know, hopefully peaceful and blessed space with the work you're doing and the people you're with and the offerings that you're bringing to others. How did you, I know you were working and you had a job and you were consulting with someone, and she was actually, I believe, working with Thich Nhat Hanh, or you want to tell us that story?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. Yeah. So I was working at Accenture, which is a global management consulting firm, and it is a high-pressure, upper-out kind of firm. Like, you really got to carry your weight and then some. And I was on a, you know, a large-scale engagement, a technology project for an energy company. And there was a lot of pressure and a lot of deliverables and deadlines. And one of my clients, my client counterpart, an engineer, super smart woman with a big heart, actually asked me one day, you know, have you heard of mindfulness? And I said, no, never heard of it. And then she said, well, it's about learning how to direct attention, you know, at will, to deliberately pay attention on purpose in the present moment. And not just paying attention, but doing so in a way where we're noticing what we're noticing with openness and curiosity, and not judgment and not criticism and not comparing, but really a beginner's mind. So she taught me what mindfulness was, and then she taught me how to become more mindful. She taught me the skills of training myself to be more mindful. And that was 22 years ago. So I'm so grateful for that experience where I unexpectedly met this wisdom teacher who was and continues to be close to Thich Nhat Hanh. And that really started my deep training in mindfulness.
Right. And we're gonna dive into that a little bit more. But let's talk about your book. You have a book. You've written a book. And I'm actually working on the part that talks about creating your own, create your own program, you know, create a morning routine. And I want to talk about that. But you've written a book that you were requested to write by National Geographic, which is pretty impressive, actually. How many people get a call and say, hi, you want to write a book? This is National Geographic. So you've written this wonderful book with a gorgeous jacket to it, called The Mindful Day: The Practical Ways to Find Focus, Calm, and Joy from Morning to Evening. So you've written this book with the idea, of course, of bringing this sense of mindfulness kind of to a, you know, a, I think you said to me you wanted to explain it so that people couldn't say, oh, poo-poo, that's, you know, nutty, crunchy stuff, but it's really scientifically and evidence-based steeped. And so you wrote it for the science. You wrote it to demystify it so that people could use it. And you want to tell us about your book because it's coming out soon. It's going
to
be very soon. Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's so fun to hear you talk about National Geographic calling me because I remember that moment like it was yesterday. You know, those moments in life that are seared right into your every cell. So that was beautiful. And what I love is that National Geographic is known for science, and they're interested in you know, the emerging themes of our time, discoveries and explorations of what's new. And they were very interested in mindfulness, and they wanted a book that was very practical and very accessible for modern people in a very busy world where we're wired to technology 24/7. We've got a lot on our plates. And we're committed to a lot of different projects and people. So they wanted a book that was easy to plug into. And the structure of the book is a day. So there's five sections. It starts with the home, and then work, and then play. So all the things we do for fun and leisure and creativity. And then love, and then home. So it really explores, you know, how can I be more mindful and present and connected and navigate the hard stuff and amplify the good stuff, whether I'm at work or in a, you know, traffic jam or engaging with my kids or, you know, my partner or, you know, walking in at the end of the day. How can I not only set up a home or apartment or dwelling in a way that cultivates or creates a sanctuary for being present, but also how can I create routines and rituals that ensure that I've got opportunities to be still or connect or dance wildly. So being mindful doesn't always mean sitting quietly. It could be having a dance party, but when you're doing it, you're very present.
Don't you think that we talked in the pre-interview about how we're all wired in, we're all technologically wired in. I'll confess to you, I don't have a cell phone, and I will not get a cell phone. I don't want one. I don't need one. And, you know, my children, I have three millennials who, you know, live and die by their cell phone.
Yeah.
And I don't have one. But don't you think that today we're kind of closing circle? We're seem to be folding back onto ourselves, because I hear so much talk about people saying, oh, we, you know, have to put these cell phones down. As a matter of fact, Arianna Huffington just wrote a huge article about it, about what technology is stealing from us. And one of the things it's stealing is our presence, is our mindfulness, is our being in the moment, our being with what is. And so how do you feel about technology and counterproductivity on it, you know, the day? You've written a book about a day, and in the course of the day, I bet you most people have been on their cell phone 10, 15, 20 times, if not more.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. And I think we're on our cell phones more like 20 times an hour, and that's probably low. So when we look at how often people check their phone, you know, it's upwards of 100 times a day just automatically check their phone. And there's a couple things happening. It's becoming an addiction. So the circuitry that creates addiction, where we have a reward based on a behavior or a habit, the reward is that we get kind of a dopamine hit when we receive a message or a text or a like. There's a little jolt that happens in the brain chemistry, and that starts to anchor that habit. So one, it's an addiction, and two, we're not that comfortable with just being by ourselves and not doing anything, or having that moment in the elevator where you're riding up or where you're waiting outside the elevator or where you're waiting in line. We tend to just pull out the phone and look at it. So that's just two examples of many where technology is filling up all the moments of our day. However, I'm not down on technology. I think technology can be used very wisely, and technology can be used to help us become more present when we use it wisely. But what we need to do is be very intentional about when and how we're using our phones. So, for example, in our family, there are no phones at the table, ever. So anytime we're sitting at any table, there are no phones. Mm-hmm. As soon as a phone is present, even, you know, if you go out to lunch with a friend and someone puts their phone even face down on the table, the conversation becomes more superficial. So it's just incredible. So we can set up rituals. We can decide to turn off all, like on my phone, I have no alerts that come in that are generated by a machine. For example, there's nothing that comes in from Facebook or Instagram or anything that says you have new messages or so-and-so's birthday is today or anything. The only message that comes through to me was generated or initiated by a human being. So there are a lot of ways we can turn things off. We can only check email 3 times a day instead of every hour. But that takes forethought and takes discipline and takes structure. And that's what being conscious and mindful is about, is bringing that consciousness to how we use technology.
Well, it's also a value-based experience, mindfulness. And
yes,
we're going to have to take a break, if you can believe this. We're going to have to take a break in 2 minutes, but I want to raise something with you. I've been doing a little studying, because I am in the research field, and I've been doing a little studying about why people are so attached to their phones and why are they constantly checking their phones. And after a number of years and speaking to a lot of people, including my patients and my students, and taking some surveys, it seems to be, the conclusion is, that we're all waiting for love and recognition and acceptance and acknowledgement. And the telephone, the phone, the email, the text represents the hope, the possibility, the surprise maybe, the anticipated, the longed for, unexpected joy of someone or something or somehow. We're going to be valued and we're going to be recognized or we're going to be contemplated or celebrated or we're going to have something really good happen to us. We're not going to be ignored. We're going to have meaning. We're going to have some sense that we belong and that we have value. And this is kind of on a sociological level, it's disturbing because it's actually anti-mindfulness, in a sense, when we become so preoccupied, when we feel so empty or deficient, or we're looking for a sense of purpose that we don't feel in our lives. This works against all of the things that is required to actually become mindful. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to do our little commercial. And when we come back, I would love for you to talk to that, because if you think about it, and you watch people with their phones and with all of their, you know, many applications that are on there, it's as if we're always waiting for a little bit of a present, a little bit of a gift, a little bit of an acknowledgement. And that can't be good for mindfulness. So when we come back, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Don't go away, anybody. We're going to be right back very shortly with Laurie Cameron.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance. a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
We are back. Today we are speaking with Laurie Cameron, who is the author of The Mindful Day, and an amazing and mindful human being who is sharing with us her many years of experience of teaching and practicing mindfulness. And Laurie, before the break, I asked you if you would, when we return, reflect on the conversation we had about how people are anxiously awaiting recognition, some sign, some joy, some happiness. And isn't that what mindfulness is about, is actually creating it rather than waiting for it? And what are your comments about our discussion?
Yes, I think those are great points you raised. I think we are waiting for love and connection and belonging because that's how we're designed. So we are a tribal species. We're a social species. And we love to be together in groups and packs, and that's how we survived a long time ago. And we still need that, and we long for that. You know, people say there's an epidemic of loneliness now and isolation. So I think that it's very natural that we're looking for connection and we're looking for validation. If it's a Facebook like or an incoming text or, you know, a message on one of our social media platforms, that's all very natural. I think what we need to look at is how we can consciously do two things with mindfulness. One, as you said, we can create and generate those things with our own actions, words, and behaviors, and we don't need technology to do that. I have a chapter in my book called Gather Your Posse. It's about community. We love to be together. We love to gather our people, whether it's friends or families or a book club or, you know, a sports team. We love to gather together, and that's really important. So we can, again, create structure. It comes back to that, an intention around pulling people together. But the other thing is mindfulness helps us create and generate positive thoughts or positive actions, but it also helps us notice and acknowledge when things are already present. And that's one of the key themes that I help people with, is to take a breath and stop and notice the tribes that you already belong to, the people that love you, the groups that you're already connected to. So sometimes we blow through the day on autopilot in a trance. We don't really notice those positive aspects of joy, connection, and belonging that are already there if only we stop. I just went outside of my house and built a big snowman in the front yard, and my neighbors were out shoveling and having snowball fights and so on, and we all connected and came together in the street. But, you know, it requires choosing to go out, choosing to look up, choosing to gather around. So we need to create space and have an intention to reach out to others.
Absolutely. And isn't in having intention around becoming more aware? I mean, the introduction, when I wrote the introduction for you for the show, I was thinking so much about, yeah, what if someone did offer us a gift and said, you can eliminate your suffering. You can feel more joy. You can feel more happiness. And you can have more love. Would you take that gift? And I think that we've become possibly so distracted that we kind of brush that off. How do you overcome that? Now, you are a mindfulness teacher and you're in the real world. So how do you overcome the fact that many people would go, oh, please, please, what are you talking about? I'm too busy. I know. What is a trick? What is a trick question?
Right. That's such a great question. And, you know, being human involves, as the saying goes, 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. So there will be illness. There will be loss. There will be pain, you know, different things that do create suffering. But we can really reduce our suffering by how we relate to the experiences that we have. So one of the things that we need to do is start to become more aware of the habits of our mind, on how we interpret things, on the patterns. You know, some of us have an experience and we personalize it and we say, oh my gosh, that's my fault. I did this. I always do it that way. You know, I'm such a failure. I'll never do this. I'll never do that. So we really sink way deeper into suffering because of how we interpret. Where other people, we don't personalize it. We say, okay, this happened. You know, I'm learning from it. You know, I'll be better next time. This is impermanent. That's a mindset that I cover in the book, this idea of impermanence, or, you know, that came from Christian tradition, this too shall pass. So we learn to relate differently to the difficult things that happen, and then we learn to consciously amplify the good. So when we're walking, today was gorgeous snowfall, and when I'm walking in, you know, down the street and the trees are covered with snow and all the feathery branches and the snow's falling, to actually stop and notice how beautiful that is. And, you know, to pick up a snowball and hurl it at somebody, you know, to play, because we get a lot of joy out of play. So it's about that. So I don't have to carve out 3 days out of each week to, you know, go to a mountain and sit by myself or to go on a mindfulness retreat. I can actually learn to practice being more open and present and awake for the life that's already here, for my life right now.
That's so wonderful. And you were sharing with me rain. Somebody's saying, rain? What were you sharing, rain? You were sharing rain that you explained as the four things that we can do to actually perpetuate that. I guess if we do nothing else, if we're not even doing loving kindness meditation, or we're not having morning rituals, which we're going to get to very shortly. But can you talk about rain, which is kind of like almost something we can apply as soon as we get off listening to this, show? We can actually put it right into motion.
Yes, rain is a wonderful practice. It's been around in the mindfulness world for a while, and it stands for recognize, allow, investigate, and then the N is natural presence, natural compassionate presence. So the way it works is when I'm having a difficult moment, when I'm, you know, triggered by a comment from my teenage daughter or my husband or a neighbor or my boss at work, or something my own thought, you know, something that I do, and I feel that in my body, emotions begin in the body, I feel that surge of emotion and that sweaty hand or that rapid heartbeat, I start the rain practice right there. And so that R is recognizing. recognizing that this is a difficult moment, or wow, this big emotion is here, anger, frustration, sadness, fear. So R is recognizing. And when I do that, when I even do that first step, I'm creating a little space around that emotion. And I can just take a nice breath in with that recognition and say, whoo, anger is here. I'm feeling it right now. And then the A is allowing. I'm allowing and accepting whatever emotion it is to just be here. So often, as you said earlier in the introduction, we suppress or deny or push away difficult moments or difficult emotions. And the wise way to respond to difficulty is through allowing. And we allow this to be here. Okay, this is what this is like. This is how I'm feeling now. I'm feeling sad because I'm, you know, missing my mom at the snowball fight. Or I'm feeling, you know, even big emotions like joy. I'm feeling a lot of joy. And I'm just allowing that to be there. So the A is learning to be with whatever comes. We welcome everything. We welcome all of it. And then the I is a really wonderful skill. It's about investigating. So a lot of times when we are feeling stress in the body or feeling really upset, it's actually because we're exacerbating the difficult moment by the stories that we're telling ourselves in our head. So I is about inquiry and investigating, you know, what am I believing right now? You know, what am I assuming about myself in this situation? Or what am I assuming about the other person? I have a number of coaching clients, leaders in different businesses, and they use RAIN when they start to catastrophize, you know, when they start to mm-hmm. blow up the situation and say, oh my God, now this is going to happen, then this and this. So the I in RAIN helps us investigate and use inquiry. And then we start to settle. The mind and body is starting to settle. And then N is returning to our natural presence. Our natural presence as humans, underneath all the drama, underneath all the habits of mind, is loving awareness. So we return to that with the breath, and we just calm the body. And sometimes I even put a hand on my chest and just say, it's okay, sweetheart. You know, you've got this. And even the physical touch, as you know, as a doctor, will just calm the body. You know, oxytocin is released and I can just calm my mind and body. Mm-hmm. So RAIN is a wonderful practice to help us navigate life's everyday challenges and moments.
Well, I think it's such a simple and immediate application. And you know what comes to mind for me? Heartbreak. Let's just take heartbreak as an example. For those of you who are listening, and for anybody who's had a broken heart, please, has anybody not had a broken heart? If you've escaped without a broken heart, we want to hear from you, let me tell you, because
right.
You're going into the Guinness Book of Records, okay? So let's take a look at RAIN with regard to a broken heart. We recognize what's happening. This relationship has ended. I love someone, and this person has ended a relationship, and they've actually moved far away, and this is what's happening.
This is here.
This is real. And
yeah.
And I can't, you know, deny it. That goes into
right. Allowing.
By allowing, we stop denying it, and
right. We
accept that this is what's happening. And by allowing us to accept what's happening, we can accept the sadness. We can
yes. Accept
the anger. We
yes.
can accept the depression that might come. We can accept the loss and the feeling of emptiness. And so it becomes, what I like about RAIN is it's such a wonderful, you can apply it to anything.
Yes,
you know, you can apply it to losing your job. You can apply it to, you know, losing a divorce. You can apply it to, you know, money losses, anything. And then when you go into the investigative stage, I like this one a lot because especially when you break up, you know, the first thing is, oh, the relationship's over. Oh my God, it's over. It's finally over. Then you allow yourself to have all these feelings, right? And
yes.
then when you investigate, you say, but wait a second. My, you know, I'm thinking, oh, he never loved me. You know, he rejected me. He threw me aside, you know, and you start to get, you know, catastrophizing and you're getting carried
yeah.
away and you're going from black and white thinking. So talk to us about how this investigative component, how we can look at what we're thinking and then take a step back and maybe be able to rethink it.
It's a great, great example you're bringing up with the heartbreak, because as we investigate, we start to peel back the onion. Like, what am I feeling? It might start with anger, you know, how dare he? And then it might go to sadness. And then underneath the sadness, we might discover that there's fear. You know, what if I never find someone again? What if I don't know love again? Mm-hmm. And we can start to really allow these, you know, peel back the onion and see all the different like mosaic of emotions that are there, and just meet those with tenderness and with self-compassion and say, gosh, all of that's here. And then we can even start to, after we allow them, we don't rush through that, but then we can say, we can bring our wise, rational, cognitive prefrontal cortex into the party and say, well, you know, is that really true? You know, do I really think I'll never meet someone again? Or do I really think it was my fault? You know, sometimes we're in self-blame when there's a difficulty. If we get fired at work or we're, you know, at the end of a relationship, we can, that inner critic, that, you know, that tough voice can really engage. So in the I stage, the inquiry and investigative stage, we can really look at those thoughts that are sometimes really tough and then find out that they're not really true.
Right. And we can go back to the allow stage to say, you know,
yes,
I'm going to allow the fact that I could be wrong, because maybe it wasn't that he never really loved me. Maybe it was that things changed in year 3 or year 4 and that it started to go in a different direction. So maybe I didn't waste, you know, 6 years of my life. Maybe I wasn't looking, you know, and paying attention and being mindful of what was happening. So it kind of also gives you skills to be able to keep reintegrating the information, doesn't it?
It does. You know, RAIN helps us be with emotions, clear the mind, restore the heart. And ultimately, when we practice RAIN over and over, we're increasing our capacity to be with what's hard. And that is the foundation of resilience. We build resilience by having a tool like this, by having skills to be mindful and compassionate with whatever life brings, with ourselves and others. And what's really cool is that as we learn to become more mindful and compassionate with ourselves, we absolutely become more compassionate with others. Mm-hmm. And as you said earlier, you know, before the break, it always comes down to love, belonging, and connection. And so what we're doing is increasing our skills to get better at how we love ourselves and how we love others.
Yes, isn't it amazing how simple life really is? It's the last one, natural presence. You were saying that, you know, we're going to go deeper and deeper into returning to our own self and to our natural humanity, which is generally soul-based. But I was sharing with you at the pre-interview, I interviewed a gentleman, it was a physician, who had died on the operating table. And he had a serious near-death experience. And when he came out of it, to make a long story short, he said, after he went to heaven and he met all the, you know, people he was supposed to meet, he said, the message of life, the reason I'm here, the reason I'm back here is for two reasons. And he changed his lifestyle enormously. He said, is to love and forgive, and that whatever brings you there, whether it's a near-death experience, whether it's mindful meditation, whatever it is, when we come to understand, this is a toughie. It really is a toughie because it sounds so good and it's so hard to do. You know, when we get to a place where loving ourselves, loving other people, accepting and moving into, as they say, I like the term, leaning into life for what it is. And I can't believe we're going to have to take another break, but when we come back, we absolutely want to talk about creating a practice. I mean,
okay.
Let's say somebody's on the call, right? And they say, "Oh, I want to do this. I want to do this tomorrow. Okay, I want to get up in the morning and I want to start. You know, I don't have to do an hour a day. I want to do something every day. Can you give us a little walkthrough, whether it's mindful meditation or whether it's a body scan or one of the other wonderful tools that you've written about? If we can have the information we need of how to begin to do this for ourselves And I'm also going to ask you at the very, very end, as I did before when we were on the pre-interview, as to what all of this means for you. What does this? You've been through a lot. You've had a lot of loss. You've had a lot of love. You've had a lot of wonderful things, too. How would you sum up life and the meaning of mindfulness for you in terms of navigating life? So let's take a break. We'll be back with all kinds of questions for you, Laurie Cameron, okay?
Great.
All right. Don't go away, everybody.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back with Laurie Cameron. She is the author of The Mindful Day, Practical Ways to Find Focus, Calm, and Joy from Morning to Evening. Laurie has been generously sharing her life and her wisdom with us. And before the break, I asked if she would put us on the path to being able to wake up tomorrow morning and start a mindfulness practice so that we can begin to move into this wonderful discipline to give us greater joy and greater happiness.
So, yes, I really invite everyone to experiment. So don't take my word for it. Just experiment in your own life with what it would be like. What does your day feel like or your week feel like if you start a mindfulness practice? And I'll give you some steps on how to do that. The first is to find a space in your home that you can go to every morning. So that helps. If you don't have decisions to make when you're sleepy, it helps to have a regular space, whether it's a chair in your living room, a cushion in your bedroom, a chair on your back porch. But pick a space. And then be very intentional about the time you're going to do it and hook it to a habit that you already have. So if you walk the dog, when you come in from walking the dog, you're going to sit for 5 minutes and do mindful breathing, which I'll explain in a moment. Or after I brush my teeth, I'm going to sit in my room and meditate. So find a space, hook it to a habit you already have, and then choose. I recommend people start small. I think 5 minutes is a great amount of time to start, but if you start with 1 minute, great, because even starting with 1 minute a day will start the habit. So just say you pick 5 minutes. Begin with mindful breathing. That's the core foundational mindfulness practice. It's in the beginning of my book. I have 5 foundational practices to start to build our skills and muscles, but mindful breathing is simply about bringing attention to the process of breathing, to the feeling of breathing. I'm not thinking about breathing. I'm noticing the inhale and the exhale. And again, the inhale and the exhale. I'm not forcing my breath. I'm not holding my breath for 4 seconds or 4 breaths. I'm breathing naturally, following the inhale and the exhale. And every time I get distracted or my mind wanders, which it will, I return my attention to the breath, and I begin again. And the whole practice of mindfulness is beginning again, just starting again with gentleness and kindness. And then, here's the best part, whatever you practice gets stronger. So as I sit each morning for 5 minutes, I'm strengthening the circuitry in my mind and body that allows me to pay attention, to sustain attention, to regulate emotions, to be more self-aware, to be more present. I'm building up my capacity by doing the 5 minutes of mindful breathing every morning. And then over time, over a week or two, you can increase to 10 minutes. You'll find that the longer you stay on the cushion or in the chair, the more benefit you get. Like, you start to really savor those, you know, the minutes after 10, like your body's really calm and starts to center and settle. And you access that peace that's available inside all of us.
And amazingly, and I'm sure you could tell us lots of stories about this, things like wisdom and answers to questions you had 2 days ago all of a sudden start popping up.
Yes.
And you want to talk about that?
Yes, thank you for that. So one of the beautiful things about creating space and taking the attention out of that busy popcorn machine of a mind and bringing it into the breath is we make space for insight. So this type of mindful breathing is also known as insight meditation, and we allow insight and wisdom to arise. We all have that inner wisdom, and we just need to make space for it. We need to make carve out places for peace. And whether you do the mindful breathing in the morning, or you take a walk at lunch if you're at work, or you sit in your car before you come in at the end of the day and take those 5 or 10 minutes, we can create space. But you're absolutely right. That's where we get insight. So this is a wisdom practice.
Yes, it's wisdom, it's peace. And it's certainly, if I can say, as a health practitioner, it's very healthy.
Yes.
Because we're slowing the nervous system down. We're relaxing the vascular system. We're giving our bodies an opportunity to rest and relax and be calm. And it's so it's not just healthy physically, it's healthy emotionally, it's healthy spiritually. It's healthy in every possible way. So, Lori, I get up in the morning and, you know, I go and I do my 5 minutes. And do I also toss in a body scan maybe in a week? Or what would be the progression that you see?
Well, that's such a great question. And I think starting with mindful breathing is great. After a week or two, it's really up to the individual. You could begin with additional practices. I would even go next. You could either do body scan, which is systematically bringing attention from one part of the body to the next. And we do that for multiple outcomes. One, we're training our insula. We're training the part of the brain that is associated with interoception, so tracking what's happening in the body. And this is the key to self-awareness. So if I'm aware of sensations in the body, that's the key to emotions. If I can feel my stomach tighten or my heartbeat speed up or my, you know, feeling of nausea in my body while I'm talking to somebody or making a decision, I get really critical information. So training with the body scan is very powerful for emotional awareness and self-awareness. And you can do it at night before you go to bed, mm-hmm. and it's a wonderful way to relax. Mm-hmm. And then I also really recommend the loving kindness meditation.
Oh yeah.
And that is systematically offering good wishes, beginning with ourselves, extending it to people we love, and then moving out in ever-widening circles to community, to people in our country, to, you know, to people around the world. We're training ourselves in how we orient the mind. We're training ourselves to be more positive and recognize that we're all connected.
Yes, and I want to share something about that. I shared with you that loving kindness is the meditation I do. And for anyone who has a conflict, anyone who has a broken heart, anyone who's going through a divorce or is going through, someone has an illness, when you're doing loving kindness and you really embrace and bless and welcome all good things to people, whether it's conflicted, whether it's someone you love and you're concerned for or whatever, it really does change some things. It's quite remarkable. I was doing loving kindness for a period of time for someone that I had had a falling out with. It was just incredible to see that they were getting that. They were getting my kindness and my love for them, because eventually we were back in touch with one another. And so it does happen, and I'd love your thoughts on that.
It's really beautiful. And what's interesting is when we sit and systematically extend good wishes to someone, so it might sound like you might bring that person to mind that you're in conflict with, and you might think of them, see them in your mind's eye and say, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be well, may you be loved. If I do that every single day, what happens is it actually activates the positive centers in the brain in my own body. So we see those parts of the brain that are associated with affiliation and belonging and love, they become activated when we practice loving kindness meditation. We have a lot of research and studies on people that systematically practice this, and it changes our orientation. So it's really powerful. We haven't been able to scientifically measure how it affects the other person, but you know, it's very similar to prayer in some ways. And Dr. Larry Dossey has done a lot of work in the power of prayer, and we can't always measure how that works, but we see that even if we pray for people on the other side of the earth, that something happens with that population. So it's, you know, that part is still under study, but what we do know is we can actually measure what happens to us when we practice that. And what I know for myself is that when I say I've got a meeting today with somebody that I'm sort of in conflict with, or I have a difficult negotiation coming up at 3:00, I will include that person in my morning loving kindness meditation. And when I walk in the room, I walk in differently. How I sit down, how I greet them, my body, the energy that I'm emitting in the room is different than if I didn't do that.
Exactly, exactly. And you have three more, and we have so little time left, and we have three more things. I'm just going to mention them. You've got to get Lori's book, The Mindful Day. there's a practice called Just Like Me, which really helps us open up to each other and understanding
yes.
that we are, you know, this person is just like me. This person, you know, has thoughts and feelings and has experiences of love and peace and, you know, pain. And so that we become aware of how we are all alike. And then there's something called a stop practice, which is stop, recognize the emotions, take a breath, observe our direct experience, and proceed with kindness. Oh, that's a beauty.
So good.
I wish we had 15 minutes left. And then take in the good. Which is look for the good, take it in, rejoice with gratitude, and share it. Laura, your book is just, it's a blessing, it's a gift. It is a gift for us that if we're looking for those things, if we want to eliminate our suffering, if we want to have greater joys and happiness, and if we want to have a life that has more possibilities, then the book is really a gift and a guide and a teacher to invite us into process. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's wonderfully laid out. It's very clear and easy to read. And Laura, you have a website. Can we have your website?
I do. Thank you. I'd love your listeners to join my mindfulness community at purposeblue.com. And they can also find me at my book website, lauriejcameron.com. But I'd love to have them join my community, and I release articles and I blog about the book. I'm in studio recording guided meditations this week that I'll share with my community. And I just love, you know, community is one of the pillars of well-being. So I just look forward to getting to know the people that might be listening today and, you know, walking this journey together.
Right. And it's Purpose Blue, like the color. Purpose,
yes.
BLUE.com. And
yes.
I said to Laurie before she left, I wasn't going to let her leave without giving us her opinion. Giving us her opinion about you've been through a lot in life. You've experienced the inner world, the outer world, the pain, the joy, the suffering, the love, the loss, the grief. You have been a traveler on this journey, a very experienced and well-traveled traveler on this journey. So, Laurie, what do you think the whole enchilada is all about? What is it for you? What would you say to people in terms of taking up a mindfulness practice so that when they are in their process, on their path, in their purpose, what is this for? What are we living here for? And what are we all doing together? I know you have a profound thought about it.
Well, you know, I think it comes down to living fully, that we can be in the moment, awake and alive, and we can build skills and train our mind and body to be able to fully enjoy life right now, each moment of the day, and to be very connected to our purpose, to what brings our life meaning, and to one another, because we are all interconnected. And the key message here is that it's not just an affirmation or kind of a feel-good concept, that whatever we practice goes stronger, gets stronger, and that if we deliberately and intentionally practice the skills of mindfulness, we change our default way of being. We actually can train ourselves to be more awake and tapped into the wonder and awe and joy that's available to every one of us in every day.
That is so, that's so uplifting. And I think for me, I'm just going to share with you as an individual, I like the idea of eliminating as much suffering as possible.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, so many of us, we go through life and we have these challenges. And I think you said something about every 3,000 joys, there's 3,000 sorrows or something, 10,000 or whatever.
Yes.
And what we want to do is realize this is a gift to us from many, many people who have done this work and brought this into the world. So, Laurie Cameron, thank you for being one of the gift givers. Thank you for joining us today. Happy birthday. It's Laurie's birthday. And I want to just say this woman took time from her special day to share this wonderful wisdom with us. And I am deeply grateful, and you deserve a wonderful. And she said her birthday gift was, I said to her that she is a mindfulness Olympian. And I believe that. That was my gift to her. I said, Laura, you are a You're an Olympian. You're an Olympic athlete of mindfulness. You have developed these muscles. You have, you know, won the gold medal, and we are the beneficiaries of your wonderful success. So thank you for joining us. And for those of you who are listening, please join us again next week for another inspiring and uplifting program on living above the drama. Take care.
Thank you so much.